This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Oh, we got a big hour coming your way. Michael Bumpus in studio with us for the hour, and joining us to talk some baseball as well is our buddy, our pal, our favorite Bogan, Ryan Roland Smith. And a reminder that our weekly conversation with Ryan Roland Smith is brought to you by Sunset Chevrolet. What's going on, Ryan?
What's up, fellas? How you doing?
We're good. We got Dave here. We got Michael Bumpus here. It's just a round table. It's really a think tank.
Oh, crew.
It is a think tank. Yeah.
So you guys are going three, Dave, just because I'm here? Is that why?
That's why. Yeah. It takes three to handle you.
That's right.
Yeah, fair enough.
Wrangle him.
Hey, so Ryan, before we get into what ails this team and everything that's gone on with the Mariners, losing streak comes to an end. They win yesterday. But the story is really George Kirby. And, mm-hmm. I mean, what an outstanding performance on a picture-perfect day. Mother's Day, sunshine, over 30,000 in the stands. Give us your takeaway from what you saw from him.
Yeah, I mean, filthy. And, you know, I hate to put these two in the same, you know, conversation, because I feel like they've been doing it for the last 3 years, and they've had to hear it the last 3 years. But, okay, him and Matt Brash, right? They're always going to be compared. They're good buddies. They're two prospects coming up. And both of them have electric stuff. You hear about stuff this and stuff that and spin rate and how hard do they throw and everything else. But for George Kirby, I didn't want to come into the ballpark yesterday, Mother's Day. You know, I had the kids here and the missus and the whole thing. And I didn't want to sit here and just see great stuff, but three walks and all of a sudden, you know, three spot in the second. But yesterday, just the command, I was like, oh man, here we go. This is what we're talking about. A dude who just has unreal command and was not rattled by the fact it was his debut or the fact the team's struggling or, you know, he has to prove him. None of that. He had the stuff plus command. It was so fun to watch. And, you know, where do you start on the stuff? I mean, slider was filthy, changeup was good, but just the fact that he just lived in the top part of the strike zone with a fastball all day long, 96s, 98s, fun to watch.
Yeah, so tell us, and I heard Kevin Cash, we brought this up to George, but that he was talking about how there was lots of late movement on his fastball. Mm-hmm. So and it was like sort of inconsistent, it kept him off balance, and he was gushing over it, but tell us, you know, number one, exactly, you know, obviously it's breaking at the very end, but how do you get a baseball to do that, Ryan?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's fastball, so, like, you know, he's 96 to 98. He has, you know, plus extension. Now, when I talk about extension down the mound, I'm talking about how many feet from the rubber. So, like, the one of the best in the game is Logan Gilbert, 7.5 feet of extension. Mm. If you're around that six, low sixes, okay, great, you're a little bit above average. Well, George Kirby, 6'4". He was getting down and getting about 6.8, 6.9 feet of extension. So, as we all know, obviously it cuts down the reaction time, but also, too, he just accelerates through those pitches, and that's why he can live at the top of the strike zone. Plus, he has the good spin, but you talked about the late movement. He has that a little bit of that arm side run. So, on the fastball, you can see he threw a couple 97s later in the game, and you can see that ball start to just to really, you know, from an optic standpoint, not the metric standpoint, you could really visually see that thing run. So that was one thing. And then obviously it's the off-speed stuff. The slider is a plus pitch. The changeup, man, I was impressed with that. The thing that stands out to me on the changeup is just the arm speed. So he keeps the same arm speed. I was sitting up here in the radio booth right behind, so I was watching. You know, every time I thought there was going to be a changeup, I was kind of watching to see if he slowed down his body or not, and he absolutely didn't. And so just all these little factors, very similar to what we saw from Logan Gilbert last year. Plus command, really good stuff. And some of the other little things that you don't think of, extension, arm speed, all these things that make it really, really tough to hit.
Hey, Ryan, the mentality of a athlete fascinates me. Now, look at Kirby when he's on the mound. He was down, I believe, 3-0 in the count three times and battled back. Mm-hmm. What's his mentality in that moment? Does it change his approach? Like, what's he thinking about?
I think, well, first of all, I think he gets to those 3-0 counts because, you know, like we all do, we try and do a little bit too much, and all of a sudden we're like, oh, hold on a minute. 5 seconds ago, I was in a good count. Now I'm a 3-0, 3-1, and you don't want to lose a hitter. At the same time, you talked about the mentality. When you see a kid his age, his level, obviously he's the first game in the show, when you get down to 3-0, 3-1 in those counts, you tend to think, okay, I want to pitch away from contact because that's the game now. And you know, look, no offense to this generation. I'm not trying to sound old here. But back in the day, you had to challenge dudes. Now it's like, oh, you know, I'll just give up a base runner. It's all good. He had that thing about him where he's like, no, here it is inside the strike zone. Here it is, hit it. And you're not going to do a whole lot with it. And he attacked even when you got behind the count, which was good. It wasn't like he was going that, you know, that safety net pitch out of the strikes and hopefully they swing because guys like to swing a lot and they take big hacks and whatever else. No, he was attacking guys inside the strike zone. So again, another little, when you watch from an old pitcher to watching a guy like this, you really appreciate that. That's what the best in the world do, by the way. They attack, man. They get down in the count like that and they're on you.
Bob, Ryan says a lot of times, he says, I'm not trying to sound like an old man, doesn't he?
He does.
More and more, man.
Why do you say that so much, Ryan Rollins-Smith?
Because the more I do this, man, I'm feeling like I feel like I'm now like critiquing these young players, and they're probably like rolling their eyes like, dude, you know what you're talking about? That's what it feels like.
He's the oldest 39-year-old we know.
That's right.
Ryan Rollins-Smith. Hey, by the way, he's joining us on the Emerald Green Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hey, Ryan, as far as what we've seen out of the bullpen, we talked about this coming into the season, the idea that they were going to be able to repeat what they did last year, which was special. It felt like no matter who they throw out there, they were going to succeed. That has not been the case this year, certainly, and we even saw some of the guys who had been untouchable, Swanson and Seawald, get touched up. That's going to happen. Where are you at with Diego Castillo? Because I was not a fan last year, and people were jumping on me about, you know, give him a chance, and he's better than you give him credit for, and I guess he's kind of like Fernando Rodney in that invariably he gets the job done, but he makes it a little exciting on the way there. And then we saw him the other night load the bases, give up the grand slam. I just don't have a lot of faith when he's out there on the hill. What do you see from him?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's one of these things that he's at that point in his career. Now, if this was year number one, if he was a Andrés Muñoz and throwing 100 with a nasty slider and all of a sudden he had some inconsistencies, like, all right, let's get to work in between outings and let's try and figure this out. But, I mean, the guy's been around long enough and there's been big situations and we've seen just a little bit more. It teeters on that thing of, what are we going to get from him today? When you have bullpen guys coming in, they don't have to be the nastiest dude or the best stuff. But you want, if you're Scott Service, you're going to know what to expect. You're going to know if I'm bringing you in this situation, you have to earn those times to come in a tight game. What are we going to get from you? And now all of a sudden it's kind of teetering on that. Oh man, is this the time to bring him in, or you know, is this the right move? You don't want to have that. And I think, look, this bullpen, it's a little bit of a chain reaction when you look at this and everyone's like, oh, hey, the bullpen, they're not doing the same thing as last year. Well, I think it comes down to this. First of all, they've been losing games in different ways the last couple of weeks. Obviously, the offense isn't crushing like we saw the first homestand, but they've been losing games in a couple of different ways. When you look at the back end, now the front end guys, when you look at, look, Matt Fester or a Johan Ramirez, okay, whatever they roll out, they're most likely going to be pitching in lower leverage situations teams behind. But when you look at, say, Steckenrider or Seawald or some of these guys, For the most part, I know Seawald gave up a home run just recently, but for the most part, man, it's very similar to what we see from last year. Mm-hmm. But that one wild card, like you're talking about, you never ever want to have this, whether it's May or September. If you're Scott Service, you never want to question, all right, what are we going to see tonight? That's never a good thing because you're just going to slide right to the front end of that bullpen. You're going to be pitching in blowouts.
Pretty exciting, man, with you know, all the promise of these prospects and, you know, and for George Kirby to come up. But what about Emerson Hancock? What are you hearing about his time frame?
Yeah, not a whole lot, to be honest with you. You put me on the spot. I was thinking about him the other day. I was like, hold on. We heard so much about Emerson Hancock and the fact that the thing I love when they trade guys over when they stack that farm system. But if you want to have a Houston Astros type franchise, or if you want to have I'm going to use big market teams here, the Boston Red Sox, the Cubs for a long time, the New York Yankees. If you want to have this sustainability where this team's going to be competitive, the Tampa Bay Rays, we just saw them. How do you draft these players? And Emerson Hancock was a guy that he was the dude. He was the guy at the top of that draft board. So what are these guys going to bring to you? Obviously, Logan Gilbert, awesome. Thumbs up, great. We spent years of seeing guys get drafted, all this expectation and just bleh, nothing. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see Emerson Hancock. To be honest with you, I haven't kept up with what he's been doing of late or what his timeline is or anything like that. But I just, again, anytime you have guys that you draft, you develop, they come up and do their thing, like, again, Tampa Bay Rays. The Mariners are shooting to be like the Tampa Bay Rays, right? And I know you listen and think, oh, yeah, but they're a small market team. They do all these wacky things, Kevin Cash. No. That, well, the way they develop draft and everything else, that's what you're shooting for. And then you can sprinkle on some of these big free agents. So the more you see guys who they – homegrown guys like that, great, they're doing a great job. Because you don't want to – again, just going back to that. You want guys who you have – you have brought up all the way from A-ball. Not these guys that you're picking up at the top of the when they're in AA and AAA and trading over, because that's not showing us that the farm system is being developed the right way.
That's the second time I think I've got Ryan Roland Smith to say, you put me on the spot.
You make him feel old. Yeah, you're putting him on the spot. I don't know why he talks to you.
I take some pride in that. You know, this is a big. We got our big shot baseball analyst here. I'm just a dumb NFL guy, and I'm putting him on the spot. No, I'm kidding.
Hey, Dave, you could ask me anything, mate. I'm telling you right now. You could fire anything at me, and I'll got you. But when it comes to Emerson Hancock, that's the only subject.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Hey, Ryan, I thought it was a great explanation. Yeah.
Hey, Ryan, I love when Ty France is up to bat. Positive vibes all around. Then I look at these young guys. I look at Julio. I look at Kelnick. They both have over 30 strikeouts. And then Suarez does as well. What's the difference between Ty France's approach to the plate with these other guys?
That's a great question. One thing that Jared Kelnick has been asked, and this goes back to, you remember the 2001 Mariners? They were pretty good, right, back in the day.
Yeah, they did some things.
Yeah, they won 116. Well, the big thing, I remember I was in rookie ball. I was 18 years old coming over and just clueless. But one thing that was from the big leagues all the way down, you're talking Brett Boone, you're even talking, you know, Jay Buhner, all these guys, at two strikes, they had this massive, obvious two-strike approach. And now it's like, I don't know, we don't do two-strike approaches anymore. Well, actually, Scott Servais has talked to Jared Kelnick and said, listen, man, we've got to figure out a two-strike approach because you just, it's basically a no-brainer with the outcome with two strikes. So I think when you look at a couple of things on the strikeouts, right, when you look at this team and think that they're striking out a ton, they are fourth in walks, right? Walks are boring. I don't want to see them getting 3-2 on every at-bat. I get sick of that. I mean, get a mistake, crush, right? But their contact rate is 75% as a team. But there are the outliers there, a couple guys where you have Jared Kelnick, a young guy who's striking out a ton. It is completely psychological. Right. And you hear about him changing his batting stance and all this kind of stuff. You can see it written all over his face where he's in a situation where he's just over processing and he's just trying to do a little bit too much. You see it plenty of that. Eugenio Suarez, look, he's going to hit that backspin, that ball to right center field over the Alaska Airlines sign all day long. I can take the strikeouts. Look, the LA Dodgers are third in strikeouts as a team. And they're the LA Dodgers. I'm fine with that. But some of these younger players, these good athletes, man, you got to clean it up with two strikes.
Where are you at with Jesse Winker? I'm trying to figure him out. I know he's got a resume. He was an all-star. He's coming over to the American League, you know, maybe seeing pitching he hasn't seen coming from the National League, trying to put all those things in perspective, shortened spring training, all those things. But, you know, are we going from bad luck to just every time I think he's starting to find it, then he cools off again?
I'm with you, Bob. I'm trying to get get my thumb on it as well. I'm trying to figure out who do we have here? Who is this guy? You know, it's interesting. Like he'll hit a ball to left field off a lefty, you know, good solid contact, and then next time he's 2-1 and the ball just kind of off the handle to the second baseman. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. I'm still trying to figure that out. I think early in the year there was a couple situations where he's kind of taking like these. Look kind of like half swings, and he was kind of in his head a little bit, and you could see it written all over his face. I think he's slowly getting into a groove, but I'm with you, man. I'm trying to figure this out. One night it's like, hold on a minute, he's swinging first two pitches. Next night he's going 3-2 and fouling off 20 pitches and having those deep at bats. But again, you look at some of the numbers. Okay, on base percentage, fantastic. Everything else, but man, when you're in the middle of that lineup, you've got to get some thump. You've got to get extra bases at least, and add that to some of the patience.
Hey, Ryan, you know how they say, you know, athletes get in the zone. And, you know, we were talking about George Kirby and how, you know, he was probably trying to, you know, not get too fired up. But what did that feel like for you? Was it adrenaline? Was it like you were just focused? Was it like
it was pure skill striking out Ken Griffey Jr.?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah. Have you not heard that story?
Wait, what?
By the way, Aaron Goldsmith, who, you know, you hear him on the radio every night, you hear him on TV. He loves to, he goes, oh, hey, why don't you tell us that story again? Because he knows I get just frustrated having to tell that debut story.
But, I wasn't asking you specifically about that one.
But go ahead and tell it.
So what you're saying is this is kind of like me talking about my state championship football team, Worcester High School, 1981.
In case you're not familiar with that story, Ryan.
Yeah.
Oh, I've heard it. Don't you worry.
Yeah. People far and wide.
Of course you do.
Yeah, yeah. Dave has asked me over at his house for barbecues and beers and stuff. And I'm like, man, I'd love to. I'd love to hang out with him maybe during a football game or something like that. But then I'm thinking to myself in the back of my head, it's like, if I have to hear this high school story, I think I'm trying to back out.
That's right. You absolutely will.
That's the price of admission.
Especially if you get a couple beers in us. But,
that's right.
Yeah, they get taller. No, well, you can tell me the Ken Griffey Jr. story if you want. But also, but still, you know, as far as like, you know, what did that feel like for you when you were a pitcher?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that I got caught up too much in the 4 days in between starts, and that was good and bad. What I mean by that, when I really struggled, first of all, I was playing the game over my head 30 times, and it was just making me a nervous wreck. One thing that I think that is super important here, and you heard, you know, George Kirby said, oh, I started to hear the bros up in the crowd, all his buddies from the East Coast, you know, the chants and everything, which was awesome. He said, oh, I was starting to hear that, and it was, you know, the sun was out and blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. So you get the feeling that, and, you know, I can vibe with him on this one. You go into the game, you know, everything's tight, you're tightened up, and you're anxious, you're nervous, you just want to get out there and everything else. And so you start to kind of, the adrenaline kicks in and you start looking down the barrel and you're not hearing all the sounds and everything else. But then all of a sudden you start to realize, man, I'm doing pretty well. I'm pretty comfortable. And then the comfort factor comes in. Then you can hear your buddies a little bit. And then you can look up and look at that third row and go, wow, I'm actually enjoying the moment. And I think when you're present like that, I think for me, sometimes I got too wound up in the, you can't get nervous, you have to be quote-unquote in the zone and all this kind of stuff. But later on in my career, and I wish I learned this a lot earlier, Tom House, who was my guy, my pitching guy, he said, no, the whole not talking to anyone before the game, put your headphones on and becoming an introvert, that's not your personality. Your personality, if you can't tell, I like to, you know, not stay on the same topic for very long. I like to talk to people. So later in my career, I was just like, you know, I was just talking to everyone and chatting and whatever and talking to random people and during the game. I wasn't trying to get in the zone, so to speak. And I think that I started to look around. He said, throw you by the sixth warm-up pitch, look up in the third deck, check out some people in the stands, distract yourself a little bit. It's okay, because you need to get in that situation where you're comfortable, like you're in your backyard when you're a kid. And that helped me out massively. So I was interested in listening to George Kirby. He might be completely different. Look, some guys are completely different. It depends on, you know, what your personality flags or whatever you want to call them are. But I think for George Kirby, it was good to hear him say, oh yeah, by the third inning, I started to hear my buddies or this and that. All right, now he's starting to get comfortable and, yeah, call it getting out of that zone a little bit, get that anxiety out of his system and just enjoy it.
Ryan, when Brash was called up, first game, he's throwing nasty stuff. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm about to buy a T-shirt. Like, I'm all bought in, right? And then Kirby, and then he has his struggles, right? Now Kirby's up, and he's showing good stuff. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm not buying the T-shirt yet. Why should I buy the T-shirt with George Kirby?
Well, look, drink the banana strawberry Kool-Aid, if that's even a flavor. We call it cordial back in Australia, by the way. I would drink it because of the command side of things. Matt Brash, even from the first game, didn't quite show that, okay, all right, this is how, when he gets in a 2-1 count, this is how he gets out of it. You mentioned, Bump, you mentioned those 3-0, 3-1 counts earlier during the chat, which was 3 hours ago. But you mentioned that, and when you have a situation where you have that command on top of the stuff, that's when you can start drinking the Kool-Aid and drinking watermelon, strawberry, I don't know. I don't even know what the flavors are. No idea.
What's it called in Australia?
Let's just talk about Hungry Hippo again.
That's what he likes to. He dominates his children in Hungry Hippo.
That's his game, huh?
Yeah.
I was about to. Hey, real quick on that. I was about to take a photo because we're out the front waiting for the guys to finish painting the house inside, and I was just bored, so I pulled out the Hungry Hippo. I was going to take a photo for you guys, but I'm like, too much. You know, too much.
No. Wait. You sent us a picture of your beautiful family at this ridiculous car,
monster truck
yes. thing. There's like, he made his wife sit through this bump, and like there's one that comes and you know eats the other truck. There's fire coming out of it. I mean, it was a hillbilly fest. Basically.
My son, who's three, wanted me to go a different way. He wanted me. We're driving, and there's a big, huge billboard of Gravedigger. They're over here at Lumen Field, the monster trucks. Yeah. And Gravedigger's one of my favorite trucks. Man, he's a stud. Him and
he's a stud.
Yeah, him and the Megalodon shark truck, and there's a big billboard of the Gravedigger. Said Dad, hey Dad, can you? Lennox said, Dad, can you go this way? Because the Gravedigger's like, you got it, mate. And boom, we went the long way home to check out the billboard.
I love that he calls the truck a stud. That truck's a stud.
Yeah,
the Gravedigger's a stud. So Ryan, we appreciate it as always, my friend. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
There you go. There's Ryan Roland Smith with us every single week. Our weekly conversation with him is brought to you by Sunset Chevrolet. Always fun. And I think you could relate to this. I think you told me about playing your kids, and maybe it was basketball, where you're like,
yeah,
I'm not taking it easy on them. He was talking about playing hungry hippos with them and dominating them. So there's not you're not coddling.
Nah.
You guys are teaching them life lessons.
I've yet to take an L. I'm holding on to that.
You,
I gotta
you
earn
should,
it.
Man.
I gotta earn it.
My kids were the same way. Like, I never let them win.
Nah.
And then they finally beat me in horse, and I'm like, okay, you earned it. It's real.
Yep.
It's not some fake thing. Yeah.
Did you talk smack to them, too?
Oh, yeah. I was dominating. My elbows to the side. Let's see if you can make that.
Forearm shiver. Yeah. Poor Kendall. Poor Jake on the ground crying. Mom's picking them up. Dave's going, hey, they got to learn.
Hey,
what do you want?
Tough it up. Suck it up.
So good. All right, if you missed any of our conversation with Ryan Roland Smith or any of our guests today, and you want to hear him again perhaps, whatever it is, just head to the podcast page, seattlesports.com. You can search Wyman and Bob wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and click subscribe. That's the key to the whole thing right there. And go ahead and rate and review if you've got time to say something nice. If it's mean, just save it for Friday. Coming up, how many of the Seahawks rookies can be immediate starters? We're going to talk about that next. It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus in. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Wyman and Bob is powered in part by Coors Light, made to chill. Our thanks to Ryan Roland Smith, who joined us in the previous segment talking some baseball. Now we turn our attention to the world of the Seattle Seahawks, who wrapped up their rookie minicamp over the weekend. Dave was out there for a bit taking a look at some of these guys, and we heard a bit from Pete Carroll talking about some of the players, Dave, and Bump. He had this to say about Kobe Bryant, who I know has got to be Bump's favorite because Kobe's his all-time favorite, and this
Kobe.
Is... This is his namesake, and he wants to wear number 8. I think he is wearing number 8 out
yeah,
there
it is. Yep,
in honor of him. But a guy who many are saying they thought he was, if he wasn't the best corner, and this includes Sauce, this includes Stingley Jr., they thought he may have been the best. He lands on the Seahawks roster. But Pete Carroll, obviously very excited about what he's seen from him so far.
Oh, yeah. I love the corners, you know. I can't wait to get work with he and Kobe and the other guys. Bryant made some real nice first day of it, you know, and really an accomplished college kid coming out. And he just seems like he's comfortable. He understands it. He gets it. So that's probably why he was recognized for a couple of years being a leader in that program and all. That's just an early impression, but a really good first impression.
So he's obviously happy with what he saw from him. And then I want to play you one more before I ask you guys the question about starting. But he was asked about whether Bryant has a chance to be a day one starter.
Yeah, we'll see. Let's see how that weighs out. But he's very comfortable and accomplished at the spot. You know, and he's got feel and sense. You can just tell. It just, you know, you can't hide that. And so that just gives him a leg up on getting started. There's no transitioning going here. It's going to be very smooth for him, I think.
So realistically, and Dave, we'll start with you. You were out there looking at some of these guys. Realistically, talking about just starting day one from this rookie class, I've got three names in mind, but I'm curious how many you think realistically go in as starters.
Well, I think Trey Brown definitely has earned that, and I think he's really good. I really like the mm-hmm. way he plays. Just, you know, lack of experience, but I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to see like Sidney Jones as a starter possibly, and maybe Kobe Bryant. Because even, you know, like Sherm started off like, what, 7 games in, six games in,
after
something
an injury,
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it was Walter Thurman that got hurt. So, you know, but I don't know, man. Kobe Bryant, I mean, I would say if I had to pick it right now, and it would be probably kind of a long shot, I would say that he would start just because his confidence, the way he talks about it, and I'm big on that. When somebody mm-hmm. can talk about how they're playing and why they're doing the things that they do, they understand the game is what it means. But, I mean, this guy is probably the most NFL-ready of any of the players drafted, I feel like. I mean, there's a lot of question marks with, you know, look at we're hearing about the tackles and the run blocking. I don't put that much credence into it, but there is some of that. Tariq Woolen, the other corner, super raw, you know. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of the same thing with Boye Mafe. But yeah, I feel like either him or Ken Walker have the chance to be maybe like the most, you know, NFL ready.
Bump, I've got three. I've got the two tackles. I've got Cross and Lucas, and then Bryant would have been my third. If we were asked, who do you think realistically could enter week one as a starter yeah. from this rookie class? Those are my three.
I would substitute Abraham for Lucas, and I would put Ken Walker in there.
Over Penny and over yeah. Carson. We don't know about Carson. I mean, think he starts ahead of Penny?
Well, I don't know about starting, but I'm saying like biggest impact, you know, for a rookie.
Yeah, I think the tackles are going to play. That's why they drafted these dudes. And we look at that offensive line and we know we look at that offensive line and we know they just need some help, right?
Yeah.
I think with Kobe, he's a Jim Thorpe Award winner. Like technically he's the best corner in the country, yeah. right? He just have guys in front of him who have probably better measurables than he does. But I think that with his confidence, with his IQ, and it's the way he plays the football when it's in the air. I love his body control. He does not panic when that ball is in the air. I think he has a chance. What he did this weekend is what he's supposed to do. This is a rookie camp. Like, the veterans aren't there yet. It's different when the veterans show up and the vibe is different. You're not the alpha there anymore. You got Trey Brown who's already played. You're looking at Jamal. Like, things change a little bit. And the good football players don't let that affect him. So we'll see what he does when the big boys come into town. But so far, he did exactly what he was supposed to do, perform well at a rookie camp. I think that Sidney Jones is probably going to start, and then you work in Kobe. I say week three or four, we see a bit more Kobe.
What did you guys take away from Sidney Jones last year? I thought he was good. He didn't fly off the screen to me. I thought he was solid. I know people love him because he went to UW. I get it. But what – in terms of what he brings to the table here, skill set wise, did he look like a guy like, oh yeah, he's clearly that the guy who's going to start on that side, or he's going to start on that side because that's who we have, and we got Trey Brown on the other side? Because going into the draft, there was no depth. Dave, you and I talked about that a ton.
Yeah,
not a lot of depth at that spot. They brought in some guys. Very excited about Kobe Bryant. So where are you at with Sidney in terms of really just looking at him and what he brings to the table?
Well, he's not clearly the starter, but he did some really good things last year. And remember, he had the pick that wasn't for a touchdown, or was it a pick six, or he got down to the 1 yard line or yeah. something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, and he's a good tackler, better than average tackler as far as a corner goes. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's a good piece who could possibly develop into a starter.
He's done enough to be the number one guy in the depth chart when camp comes around. But mm-hmm. now he's going to battle to hold that spot, right? Especially in his position. You do well enough to be the starter for the rest of the season, but then you see who they're drafted in. So he's not sitting around thinking, I'm comfortable. I got my spot.
Right.
Guys are coming in to compete. So he's done enough. He didn't, like, jump off the screen at me and say, this is our guy. But it's his spot to lose now.
So what – I mean, the guy you were – when we were doing the draft on Friday, the name you kept bringing up was Tariq Woolen. Yeah. He hadn't been picked at that point. And you were just like, I'm hoping they get him. That's my guy. The way I read about him and people talking about him is that, man, he's loaded with physical intangibles. I mean, his height, his speed is up 4.26. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. But he sounds like he's very raw. He sounds like he's a guy who's kind of a project. Is that how you view him?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a project. I don't expect him to be a starter first year, special teams guy, maybe second or third year. These coaches are going to have to coach him up. Only 16 starts at the cornerback spot. He was a receiver before that. So there's some advantages because now you can recognize route combinations and kind of feel the game. But you got to go out and do it. And there's nothing like reps. That's why Kobe has a good shot to play because he's got a lot of reps. You play on the opposite side of Sauce Gardner. Dude's like, okay, we're going to go after this guy. And you win the Jim Thorpe Award. So, yeah, I think Tariq is a project. I think where he can contribute right now is special teams.
Well, and by the way, Kyle Hamilton was in the draft, who was a safety that was taken in the top 15 anyway. And the Jim Thorpe Award is the best defensive back. It's not best corner. You know, so, right. I mean, of all of these players, that guy, and he makes lots of plays on the ball. So the other thing about him, very highly confident.
Yeah, we played that clip of him where he was talking about his ball skills, and then I think, what did he say? Something like, I mean, I think they're the best in the draft, personally, or something along those lines. Yeah. Like, you know, it's kind of a subtle way of, yeah, I'm the best.
Well, and good point you brought up, Mike, is that they went opposite Sauce Gardner a lot of times. I mean, that was the most sort of pure talent guy. So, you know, it's funny. I remember it was not last year, but I think the year before, I texted one of the scouts, or maybe it was Schneider. There was a bowl game on. I'm like, who you like? He's like, the first thing he said, the corners from Cincy. I think it was this offseason or, yeah, anyway. Yeah, they loved him. So this guy's been, you know, I'm just surprised that he dropped as far as he did, though. You know, that,
yeah,
that's pretty, yeah, pretty deep drop.
There. Seahawks luck. Seahawks, hopefully, will be the beneficiaries of that. All right, coming up, K.J. Wright wants to come back to the Seahawks, but do the Seahawks want him back? We asked John Schneider about it. Pete Carroll commented on it. We'll let you hear what they had to say. It's coming up. It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and SeattleSports.com.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
You're not in charge of Bump.
So, I was asking a question, Dave.
You're not
in
charge of me.
I didn't make a statement.
Bump, tell him you're not in charge of me.
Hey, it's my agent.
That's the question, man.
3%.
Michael Bump is in with us. It is Wyman and Bob. We'll take you up to Mariners pregame coming up at 5:30. But we've heard over the weekend, I'm sure you saw this, Bump, that KJ has made it very clear. KJ Wright, he would love to come back to the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's Seahawks or retirement is the way he made it sound. And then Pete Carroll said, yes, we have spoken with KJ. Here's what Pete had to say.
I've already talked to him about stuff for the future and all that. I did hear that he talked about playing, and we've already talked about that.
So, you know, Pete, kind of vague. Yeah, we've talked. To what extent, we don't know. Now, we had John Schneider on earlier today, and we asked John Schneider about KJ potentially being back with the team in some capacity. Here's what he said.
Yeah, no, he's an amazing person. Both Pete and I have met with him this off season, and, you know, he's, you know, trying to figure some things out too, and as we are, but, you know, it'd probably be in some sort of non-playing role. But to your point, yeah, what a person, right? High character guy.
In a non-playing role. So we're speaking with our hearts here. At least I am saying, man, I want the guy involved in some capacity. Where, well, I don't know if he's a situational linebacker that just is out there every once in a while, but just I think his presence in that locker room could be huge, especially for such a young team, so many young players, a new defense being installed with a new defensive coordinator, even though they're familiar with him. It's still a new head voice, if you will. How valuable could he be?
I think really valuable. There's nothing like experience, right? 11 years in this league. He's the third leading tackler, I believe, in Seahawks history. He knows this culture, this environment. He can bring on these young linebackers, but also, do you want to bring him in and take a spot from a younger guy that you can, like, try to develop right now? That's why I think that non-coaching role is probably the best move, because you get the best of KJ. Like, his best
the playing non-playing role.
Yeah, the non-playing role, excuse me. His best playing days are over. Can he still play? Yeah, I'm sure he can. I don't know what he did over there in Las Vegas. He had, what, 51 tackles, two tackles for loss.
It didn't seem like he was out on the field that much for him.
Yeah, he didn't take a lot of snaps, and he didn't make a lot of plays.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. This is another reason why I felt like he didn't fit into the defense that they ran last year, which was just dreadful. Just dreadful.
Talking about the Raiders?
No, I'm talking about the Seahawks.
Oh.
Yeah, and so, you know, I feel like he didn't fit in there. But, I mean, it frustrates me because, really, his last 2 years here were his best years in you know, football just
in
general.
He was great the final year here. We were all looking at it going, man, he's more physical. He's as physical as we'd ever seen him. He's out there making plays. He's snuffing out screens. And then he was gone.
I know. And then, you know, he had 11 tackles for loss. I mean, he had 3 quarterback hits. This is 2020. And, you know, and then he had, I want to say it was like 7 or 8 knockdown passes, past his defense. So, yeah, he was just all over the place. Sorry, he had 10.
You were way off.
Yeah, so 10 and 11 the year before that, and then all of a sudden he just didn't fit into that defense, and I don't know if he fits into it now, but it sounds like, you know, that we're hearing that they pretty much had the discussion, and if he's back here in any capacity, it's going to be as a consultant.
Yeah,
you know,
but that I'm on board with that. He doesn't have to be here as a player for me. I just him being involved is sort of like Cam Chancellor being involved, or just. I think these guys have so much A, they've got so much respect. They're not that far removed from their careers. Yeah. Well, and KJ played last year, but in Cam's case, they're not that far removed to where this locker room's going to go, who's this old guy?
And you know,
they know who he is. They know who those guys are, and they still have sway. They still have some presence.
And you hear about the type of guys that the Hawks have brought in this year. They seem like nice guys, good guys. That's exactly what KJ is. If there's anyone to mentor these guys or have some similarities, it's KJ. You know, so, yeah, I think he's more valuable in that type of role. On the football field, I'm sure he can still play for somebody, but he said, look, the only place I want to play is Seattle.
Yeah, you know what, though? They should probably bring me in because I can teach them how to be an a-hole on the field. And that they need a little bit more of that. So, but
They're too nice?
Yeah, no. That, hey, look, that I think all these guys can be – and you can see in the play, like, Tyreek Smith is a really nice guy. We talked to him the other day. I met him out at the VMAC, and yeah, he's got a nice smile and all that stuff, but you see him on the field and he's a demon, man. So, but yeah, I'm frustrated for KJ because also I hope he's ready to be done. And I just feel like the way it went out was just, it was terrible. He was playing his best football and then
he sat there forever
here. Yeah. He didn't
remember. It took him forever before he got signed by Vegas.
It was like mid-season or first part of the season,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it was just we talked about it all the time. Like, how is he not on a roster right now? How is he not even on a make good deal? Like, all right, give him veteran minimum, but load it with incentives of you reach these markers, you can make X amount of dollars coming off the season. I could see if he left here and was like, man, he really looked diminished. He's getting killed out there. Yeah. He's getting put on his backside. He's not snuffing out screens anymore. It was one of his best seasons. So the idea that nobody saw a value in him or a need to even bring him in as a mentor in their situation, it was just odd to me how that played out for him.
Yeah, what didn't we see on film? Are they seeing something that we didn't see when it came to KJ? Because I felt like he was one of the best defenders out there for the Seahawks. So it's all what people need at the moment. And maybe there just wasn't a need for a linebacker like KJ Wright. But I agree with you, man. When he left here, he was balling, playing on a high note.
By the way, this is really disappointing, is that if he doesn't play, he's at 992 tackles.
Oh, man.
Oh.
8 tackles away.
Isn't that a shame? But yeah. You know what? He did sign at the beginning of the year because his stats show he started in 8 games, but he played in all 17.
Yeah.
So, but, it just that frustrates me. And part of it's probably because he's such a good guy.
Yeah.
Such a good dude. But,
well, and he said that he didn't even bring his family with him to Vegas. They stayed here. Oh. So he went, and he's not doing that again. So it's basically Seattle or bust. And, you know, hopefully he could be – boy, it stinks. He's 8 tackles away. Could they sign him to a 2-game contract and he can just get 4 tackles each game and call it a day, end with 1,000? I don't know. But just as a coach, I think there's some tremendous value to his presence.
You know what? Yeah. We could go back through his games and maybe find –
We find eight tackles.
Yeah, I would think so.
8 tackles that he didn't get credit for. They mistakenly accredited somebody else with those.
Maybe I'll see if, you know, since we're fellow linebackers, that I can give him 8. Gift
can you
him
donate?
8 tackles.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
Take 8 of mine.
Yeah, like KJ needs help from me.
What was your career total, you know?
I don't know.
You have an idea.
I have an idea.
Ballpark?
I would say it's between 450 and 500, something like
okay.
that.
Okay. All right. Boy,
992. But, you know, I just wanted to point out, I got screwed out of a lot of tackles, okay? Used to be the, you know, the people up in the booth. I mean, you could have some maniac like Bob Condotta up there.
That's look, right.
Counting
true
tackles. I'm just giving
553 Condotta. Tackles for Dave Wyman.
553.
Oh, okay.
How about that? So would you be okay with 545? You give 8 to KJ?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, probably. It's too bad I didn't have Condotta back then.
Yeah, a maniac.
I'd get
Condotta.
I'm joking. 650 probably had me up there.
All right, coming up, George Kirby's Major League debut was everything the Mariners needed it to be. We'll tell you what we're talking about next as we continue here. It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.